Good morning, Your Honors. This is Gregory Baruch with Berry and Baruch for the plaintiff appellants. I'd like, if I may, to reserve 3 minutes. Your Honors, there are 5 points I'd like to make here. First, the district court erred when it found that insurance purchasers didn't have standing because according to the court, they alleged only the injury that occurs when the car is repaired. We contend we clearly allege an overcharge at the time of purchase, as shown in our complaint paragraphs 4, 9, 34, 80 to 81, and 96. Second, these are traditional antitrust allegations. The Ninth Circuit in the Knevelbar decision said that an agreement not to compete on terms is the same as price fixing, and that's at 232 F3rd at 990 Note 8. So these falls flatly within longstanding antitrust tradition. Third,
I know you have a bunch of points. The bottom line here, and one we have to try to understand, is precisely the theory. So is the alleged conspiracy to suppress competition with respect to repair coverage quality, or is it as to premiums, or what is it?
Well, the conspiracy here is to exclude competition based on the quality of the insurance policy. Some people will want insurance in household insurance. Some people want insurance that gives you full cash value. Some people will want replacement value. It costs different amounts, and people pay different amounts, and there's competition based on that. In auto insurance, somebody with a new car might want the highest quality policy where he gets all new parts. Somebody with an old jalopy might want a cheaper policy. But there should be a choice. The system is based on choice and competition. And the issue is that when you agree not to compete on certain things and drive out the higher quality policies, the demand goes up for the lower quality policies because there aren't any higher quality. For example, if there were no color TVs, there would be more people who want black and white TVs. And standard antitrust economic analysis is that when the demand goes up for something, the price goes up too. So that the price for the black and white TVs...
Well, it depends. It's not just a demand function in antitrust economics. It's a question of supply as well.
Yes, Your Honor. But the total number of policies available to customers is also being reduced here. That is where the harm is coming to the customers. And as a result, it's a natural thing.
But it is another way of saying that, is you're just saying that there's only one kind of policy available?
That's right, Your Honor, that there's an agreement not to compete on the type of policy available. And under Knevelbard, as I just cited before, that is equivalent to a price-fixing conspiracy.
Can you walk? You mentioned, or you argue in your brief, that the consumers were injured because it was horizontal price fixing and that was a per se harm to competition. Can you walk me through and explain why this type of conspiracy amounts to horizontal price fixing?
Yes, Your Honor. That there are many cases that say that price fixing does not have to be just an agreement, like we're going to charge this amount and you'll charge this amount too. And they can also include agreements that affect the supply, so that, as the Knevelbar decision says that I just cited, if you agree, well, we are not going to provide the high-quality parts. We're just going to say these are the best policies where we just provide the low-quality parts, and that's all we're going to provide, and we're going to exclude competition on anything else, that is equivalent to price fixing, as many cases have said. And, in fact, that kind of conduct has been the subject of even criminal convictions. There's an American Radiator case that we cite in our brief where that was part of a criminal price-fixing conspiracy.
Well, let me ask you to turn for a moment, if you would, to Walker and the language in the California Insurance Code under 1860 and 1860.1. Walker has some very broad language suggesting that 1860.1 is analogous to the federal filed rate doctrine. And so long as the insurance rates have been approved by the commissioner, it doesn't matter what sort of antitrust schemes were going on, alleged conspiracies, they're not challengeable. And there's language to that effect very broadly in Walker. Why don't we say, regardless of your, if we agree with your conspiracy theory, the claims just are not cognizable under 1860.1?
Well, I think it's important to look at the actual statements in Walker, that Walker critically did not involve any antitrust conspiracy. So the Walker case was not saying that it doesn't matter that there's an antitrust conspiracy. In fact, it said that it was not at 77 Cal App 4th at 756. It said it wasn't deciding the outer parameters. In Walker, the issue was the only claim was that the rate charged was in violation of the insurance code and that the insurance commissioner was wrong in approving it, that the insurance commissioner didn't comply with the factors in the insurance code, and there was no other substantive violation. It was simply that there was a violation of the insurance code, and Walker found, look, the insurance commissioner is the decider as to whether something complies with the insurance code. So therefore, it's reasonable to expect the insurance commissioner to be the person who you go to decide that issue. And we're not going to second guess that decision about whether it's in violation of the insurance code itself. But it was not deciding the issue of what happens when there is external conduct, when there's an antitrust conspiracy. It was only limited to the issue whether there was a cause of action under a substantive cause of action under the insurance code itself.
But when you get to the end of the line, the premiums are set for particular kinds of policies, and wouldn't this require the insurance commissioner's involvement ultimately?
It doesn't need to, because the analysis is very different. But the insurance commissioner is not allowed even to consider competition issues in approving rates. And that's
the insurance commissioner is not in the antitrust business.
Exactly, Your Honor. And in fact, that is statutorily codified at 1861.05A. It says, in approving the rate, the commissioner shall not consider competition. That the insurance commissioner will only consider, certain factors about whether they're making enough money to to keep going, whether the insurance companies are harming their viability, things of that nature, and they're prohibited from looking at antitrust issues.
So this language in Walker that says if Section 1860.1 has any meaning whatsoever, the section must bar claims based upon an insurer's charging a rate that has been approved by the commissioner pursuant to the amended McBride Act, which I guess is Chapter 9 or under Prop 103. Are you saying that's dicta, or that it should be distinguished because they were looking at a different type of challenge to the insurance rates?
Well, what they were talking about there was they were simply saying, if your complaint is that the insurance commissioner didn't do his job and didn't apply the right factors under the insurance code, then your remedy is in front of the insurance commissioner. They were not deciding the issue of whether antitrust claims apply, and we believe that the Cellular Plus case, as endorsed by the Knevelbard decision, do that. And in fact, there is...
We have less than 2 minutes.
Oh, yes, Your Honor. Let me just quickly wrap up, if I may. If I may quote the Cellular Plus and Knevelbard decisions. They both, Knevelbard is quoting Cellular Plus. They both say, we find no compelling underlying logic or policy reasons for denying a Cartwright Act cause of action for treble damages to a person injured by reason of a price-fixing conspiracy, even if the fixed prices have been approved as reasonable by a regulatory agency. Now, there are since there's limited time, just a few more points, if I may. Their claim that they're immune is based in large part on the view that rate refunds are prohibited. It's throughout their brief. But Fogel, a case we put in our supplemental authority, says rebates are not prohibited. And that's 160 Cal App 4th at 1418. They also rely on immunity, as the Court has noted, from 1860.1, which is what was looked at in the Walker case. But the Donabedian case found that provision only applies to certain...
So are you claiming that the consumers are overcharged?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And so the remedy here is a premium refund?
It's not a refund, it's damages. The Cellular Plus case, which was followed by Knevelbard, makes clear that simply looking at damages does not contravene the rate. It's simply looking at what the damages were from the actual anti-competitive conduct here that we believe clearly was not permitted by statute. There is nothing saying that they can exclude competition. And Donabedian says that provision that they rely on, that Walker relies on, doesn't apply to unilateral conduct, which would include rates. It only applies to certain kinds of joint conduct. I see that I'm out of time here, so I'd like to save the time for rebuttal.
You have no more time for rebuttal. You used it all.
Oh.
That's why I pointed out to you. You had 2 minutes left, and you decided to use it, so you're out of time.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
May it please the Court, Rick Fenton on behalf of the defendants. What we're talking about here are insurance policies, not OEM policies or non-OEM policies, but insurance policies that require the insurer, in the event of an accident, to repair the car to the condition it was in essentially before the accident. And under California law, and we cite the regulation in our brief, insurers are allowed to use non-OEM parts so long as they are equivalent to the OEM part, and indeed they're required to warrant those parts. So I have to question the fundamental premise of the plaintiff's case that somehow the policies are devalued. The contract rights are the same with this so-called agreement as they were in the absence of this agreement.
But the claim that they can only get one policy, that they do not have choices, isn't that really the heart of what they're talking about here?
Well,
and
you know,
let me ask you the follow-up question. What remedy do they have? According to your theory, you have to wait until you have an accident or until you actually have a repair. I mean, how can you ever, you know, question the validity of the rate that you're paying? You're still paying whether you have an accident or not. What mechanism would you suggest that the person who is paying can challenge the rate?
The mechanism is in the insurance code. It's a complaint with the Commissioner of Insurance. And that's what Walker says. It is for the Commissioner of Insurance to determine whether or not the rate is excessive.
Well, when has the Commissioner of Insurance, if we reach California law, ever delved into the issue of competition or antitrust violations?
Well, but the question, Your Honor, is, and I want to come back to the antitrust, but the question is whether the rate is excessive. That's the allegation. And the insurance commissioner is specifically charged in the rate-making process with determining whether
the question
rate
is whether or not there's an absence of choices, perhaps.
Well, but the choices, Your Honor, are, first of all, let's look at what the plaintiff is alleging. The plaintiff is alleging that there was an agreement to use certain parts when available. Doesn't mean they're always available.
I can only get one. I think the plaintiff is saying that I can only get one policy. If I want to have a policy of this nature, it's one shoe fits all. I have no opportunity. I can only get one policy. That's the conspiracy.
If you look at the allegations about what the policy says, Your Honor, the policy says that the insurer is required to restore the car to its pre-loss condition. The policy doesn't say anything about OEM or non-OEM, and the California statute specifically allows the use of non-OEM parts.
But as I hear the complaint, it's that, in effect, that's what the policy says, but that's not the reality, because the claim being that because of the certification organization, which they claim is in cahoots with the insurance companies, that you're not getting what it says you're getting, and that they're basically conspiring to offload what certified parts that do not meet OEM quality. That's the complaint, as I hear it, in reading the complaint.
And if one has...
And if they conspired to create this false certification, which in effect then puts inferior quality, allegedly, this is all in the, you know, allegations, puts inferior quality parts onto an automobile to the detriment of the consumer, I don't know if that can withstand an economic analysis, but why wouldn't they at least have standing to pursue that?
Because they haven't received those parts, Your Honor.
Well, and to the value, though, right, of what they're getting. I mean, it was odd in reading the briefs, because the briefs weren't talking to each other. So I understand the defendant's theory that, no, we're just talking about they didn't get the value that they thought they were buying when they got the premium, and that's when they got the policy. And the district court said, that's right. but you're not harmed until you don't get the right parts. What plaintiffs are saying, though, is that there's a conspiracy out there with the certification, with other insurance companies, to give the to not give you the Durham, you know, like for the macaroni case, mm-hmm. but to use half and half. And so that's that they've conspired to create this inferior product, which is the policy, and the consumer doesn't have a choice. So address that issue. Why don't they have standing assuming this conspiracy theory as opposed to they're not getting the value of the policy they bought?
Your Honor, they haven't alleged that the policy has changed one whit because of this conspiracy. What they've alleged is the claim practice at the back end has changed. The contract rights that the policyholders purchased are the same contract rights they had before this conspiracy. They haven't been devalued in the least. And those contract rights were subject to the California regulation, which has been in effect since 1993, specifically permitting the use of non-OEM parts of like kind and quality. The other thing is there is an absolute absence here of any allegations about agreements as to price. It is not alleged that these rate filings were collusive. It's not alleged that these insurance companies don't compete as to price. If you read the allegations of the complaint, there's no allegation that there isn't vigorous price competition between these insurers. All they're alleging is that this claim practice at the back end has somehow affected rates at the front end. Whether the rates are excessive is for the insurance commissioner to decide. I'd also like to deal with this notion.
No, but that there's a difference between, I mean, the insurance commissioner is looking at reasonable rates on a different benchmark than one might look at as to whether there might be artificially inflated premiums for the policy you're getting. I mean, they're not the same measurement scale.
Well, I think let's not misconstrue cause and effect, Your Honor. Rates can be excessive for a variety of reasons, including antitrust violations, but it is the commissioner's job to determine whether rates are excessive. And let's just take an example. Suppose the district court were to determine, you know, I think your rates are excessive. I think that that the price of these parts the prices should be lower. And therefore, I'm going to say that the rate should have been 10% lower. And then there's some state court claim in California state courts, and the judge there decides or jury decides, well, I think they should be 20% lower. And there's a complaint filed by some other policyholder in front of the insurance commissioner, and he looks at it and says, I think I made the right decision in the first place. You've got three different tribunals saying there should be three different rates. It is an absolute perversion of the regulatory process to do that. And I think Walker was very wise.
But Cellular Plus and Nevelbar Dairy seems to say that there's no federal-style filed rate doctrine for these sorts of Cartwright Act claims. But so the rates are not completely protected the way they might be in a federal FTC-type system. So all you really have is 1860.1, which counsel for the plaintiff says doesn't bar antitrust actions. Can you address his argument on
sure,
that?
Sure. The insurance commissioner the statute doesn't say the insurance commissioner isn't to consider antitrust violations. What it says is he's not to consider competition in the sense that part of the insurance commissioner's job, which would not be the job of a court in an antitrust claim, is to ensure the solvency of the carriers in front of them. I mean, anybody who has shopped for auto insurance knows that there is a tremendous variation in the rates. Different companies have different risk pools. Some companies serve a higher risk group of policyholders than others. There are tremendous variations depending on rating factors among individual insureds within the same company. And those are the things that the insurance commissioner must consider in determining whether a rate is excessive. To isolate one factor, i.e., the price of these parts, and by the way, there's been no allegation that those have been misrepresented to the insurance commission, and say that the rate should be modified based on that one factor alone, up or down or sideways, really destroys the insurance commissioner's role in setting the rate. Cellular Plus alleged.
The question is whether they have standing, whether the plaintiffs have standing to bring this claim, not whether it's a good idea or a bad idea from a policy perspective. There's a question, can
they? Whether they will win.
Exactly.
Well, I understand, Your Honor, but the question is when they are alleging that the rates are excessive and seeking, they can call it damages all they want. They're seeking a rebate. And when in the face of Walker, which I think clearly holds that those kinds of rate challenges are prohibited under 1860.1, I don't think that kind of a claim is viable, whether it is an antitrust theory or any other theory. Cellular Plus involved a direct price-fixing conspiracy where it was alleged that the actual rate filings were the product of collusion. And the plaintiffs there included dealers as well as end users, and indeed the court at the end of that opinion said, you know, maybe this should be referred to the PUD to see whether they would have affected rates. So even in Cellular Plus, which was not insurance, there was a deferral to the rate-making authority.
Thank you.
I do see my time is up. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank both counsel for your argument this morning. Perez versus State Farm Automotive Insurance is submitted.